The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
There are lots of lousy businesses, and there's lots of wonderful businesses.
It's the art and science of money.
My job has been to try and figure out which is which.
It's Hi-Fi Radio from the Global News Radio studios in Toronto with Hi-Fi portfolio managers. Here's Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartle.
Well, good evening, my friends. Welcome to the weekend. Another episode of Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. It is the season to, pull up our socks and get a little more serious about life. That's what we do in the month of September. And well, I must say, from a seasonal point of view and a volatility point of view, the market has been quite manageable so far. Again, the months of September and October can be a little treacherous. But so far, this market has a lot of strength behind it. Again, driven by easy money, liquidity. That is the theme, my good friends, and our chief strategist, Tony Dwyer, continues to speak about the period of indigestion, whereby this market has had an incredible move off the bottom, almost straight up, and now it's going somewhat sideways with a slight upward trajectory, but it's digesting such massive moves, and that can take some time. At some point, he believes that, and we all agree with him, that the market will solidify either higher or lower, and the probabilities and likelihood is higher. The question is how we get there. And so it was a pleasure to speak with John Johnson, a good friend of mine from Bay Street. He used to work at one of those big banks with me, and he's a big fan of the Grateful Dead, a student of the market, a philosophical man, I must say, a very cool individual, and continues to work with Davis Ray as a strategist, chief economist. Are you working part-time now, John? You're semi-retired, but still have your toe in the water, foot in the game.
Yeah, and it's great. I love it.
Well, good for you. Speak to us. What's on your mind with respect to the market? Open-ended question for you.
All right. Well, I was just sitting and listening to what you were saying about Tony Dwyer's take on the market, and I have to confess that I agree with him right now. We were due for a bit of a correction. Our old friends in the trend and cycle department at that bank would call an intermediate correction. We saw that in some commodities. We saw that in the cyclical currencies like the Canadian dollar, the Norwegian krona, the Korean won. We saw a cyclical, an intermediate rebound in the U.S. dollar consistent with that. We saw widening in corporate spreads, not a blowout, but a widening in corporate spreads. And we saw parts of the stock market go through intermediate corrections as well. You know, small cap stocks got dinged and a number of sectors got hit. And the broad markets, though, really didn't get dented that much, consistent with the comments about liquidity, interest rates, and I would just add the trajectory of the economy. Even if it's not spectacular, it looks pretty ingrained and it's pointing upwards for the foreseeable future. So I also agree that any resolution and in the consolidation phase that we seem to be going through in the broad equity markets is probably to the upside. I think that we're still in the in a secular bull market. They tend to run for 10 to 20 years up, 10 to 20 years down. We're in the 10 to 20 year up phase. And usually during those phases, the pullbacks, the intermediate corrections, and even the 4 year cycle corrections tend to be fairly modest. They get their, everything is skewed to the upside. And I think that's where we are now. And I don't foresee a recession for the next couple of years, at least. I don't see a dramatic withdrawal of liquidity by central banks for at least a few years. I don't think that we'll see short-term interest rates anywhere near 2% until maybe 2024. And I'm considered to be on the hawkish side in terms of what I think about interest rates. So I think all in all, it points towards pretty good markets. And I think a little bit of choppiness, even a decent pullback, if we do have a bit of an upset, maybe around the debt ceiling or, some other event like that, is good. It's a reminder that there is volatility and we need you know, to have a portfolio that accepts that, is diversified, and is prepared for some dents here and there.
Everything very, very well put, JJ. Friends at home, look, we're getting technical here, but again, that is part of the business, and understanding the complexities of markets and how we invest as individuals to build wealth. And again, it must be respected. So again, we're just going to ask you to sharpen your pencil a little bit. Try a little harder to work to stay with us on the conversation, because I think it'll help you better understand the verbiage and the language that is constantly being bombarded to you from the media. So the better you understand that, the better you can appreciate what it is trying to explain to you. So Javed Mirza, again, our technician, our resident technician at Canaccord, and Jack and I are very fortunate to have a true market technician, because they are not being as well funded in this day and age by the industry. And so to have a number of strategists plus a market technician is a real arrow in our quiver. I think that's what it is. Arrow in your quiver. Yes,
that's right.
Indeed. That is correct. Yeah. And so Javed is looking for the 4E, and you know this, Jay, that's why I'm asking you the question to maybe better explain it to us. He's expecting a 4-year cycle reset anytime between, you know, 3 months ago and early spring of next year. So he is expecting that 8 to 15% type pullback in the broad market, setting the stage then for another 4-year move higher. And he too is in the camp, and friends at home, this is very optimistic, so only listen to what we're going to say here. But JJ is saying it, Javed Mirza is saying it, and I'm buying into it, have for a number of decades, that this bull market we are in, yes, there'll be corrections along the way, significant ones, 20, even 25% corrections along the way, maybe 30, but for the next 8 years, 9 years to 2029, 2030, I think it's 2029, market goes higher. I think the anniversary of the great crash is going to be the end of the secular bull market. That's going to scare the bejeebies out of me as I perhaps enter retirement. I'm 56, JJ, so I got 9 years to go, and I think the secular bull market is going to end when I leave Bay Street, as it should. No? Hey, come on.
That's good timing. So when you retire, yeah. I'll sell everything and move into the bunker with my bottle of water and canned goods.
That's what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to sell everything. Well, Javed says no. You're going to sell international equities, U.S. equities, and you're going to buy the cyclical commodity-based equities, just as we had in 2000. In 2000, the U.S. market went dead. It was a bear market in America for about 11 years. Called it the financial crisis marked the low, or the European debt crisis marked the low. And I think it was the European debt crisis, or the U.S. equity debt clock crisis, that marked the low and the new bull market began. I repeat, that was in 2000, call it 2011, friends. So it's been running for 10 years. We're 2021. And a lot of forecasters, JJ included, Javed included, Jack and I have been speaking of this secular bull market of running for 15 to 20 years. So yeah, we're in the second half of that playbook, and so far it's remarkably tracking the prediction, but it's never that easy. You know, JJ, what really frightens me, and you can appreciate this as a father, as an investor, and as a economist and a very, very smart man, the crunch for housing, the global crises for affordability in housing, and I believe, and we all know this, it's cheap money, it's zero interest rates that has funded all asset prices higher. And I said to Jack earlier in the week, it really doesn't matter what you buy, just put your money into an asset. You cannot leave it in the bank, because inflation is now running at 4.1%. So there's significant inflation out there. Temporary, permanent, debatable. Jack thinks temporary. Correct, Jack?
I do think that this phase is temporary and it will peak. Actually, we've seen signs that it actually has peaked for this part of the cycle, Wolf. But I do think that the higher growth trade, and we are going to have some structural inflation, and it's going to persist over decades, and it'll start building a base now and then move higher over time. But I do think that we have seen the peak in this cycle. And we also saw it in lumber, Wolf. You marked the top there, buddy. You paid $8.
Well,
I see them at $4 a 2x4 now.
I want to talk about that. No, my friends at home.
Thank you.
No, Jack's been feeling bad for me for the amount of money I've been spending on lumber through the roof. I bought some decking material for a 60 square foot deck, cedar. It's over $1,000. Anyway, so Jack was kind enough to go back to, he's been price shopping for me, trying to find me some deals, and he found me some 2x4 at what, 360 a 2x4, Jack?
I think it was 399. And in the middle of that peak, I remember telling you, well, if I was using reclaimed cedar to build picnic tables up at the cottage, I couldn't afford new cedar.
You know, the law of substitutes is a fascinating, but that's what you're talking about, the law of substitutes. And that too is very, very fascinating. But I want to throw it back to JJ because I get low interest rates is driving asset prices higher. An election's coming up, international pressure, local pressure, you name it, on affordable housing and the ability or perhaps lost American dream, lost Canadian dream, that if you work hard, you can buy a house. Please, JJ, speak to that.
I don't even know where to begin. I think there is this massive amount of speculation driven by low rates. And at some point, you know, interest rates are going to be higher. We could talk about inflation and maybe in a little while. I agree with Jack that longer term, we could have a bit of an inflation problem. It's temporary now. So over 5+ years, I think rates could be higher. All I can say is I remember having a financial plan done in 1989 when our first son was born. I was right out of grad school. My wife and I were working. And the guy says, oh, you're never going to be able to afford a house. We bought one 2 years later because prices crashed. And there's a history of long cycles in real estate, just like we've been talking about the equity market. And at some point, rates will go up and there'll be a problem. And in the meantime, rates are going to stay low. You know, the thing just may run out of gas and start to stabilize. That's not an environment where prices come down. You know, we're getting, you know, young people have that misfortune of having to pay up for housing. But at the same time, they're getting more money in inheritances than any generation in the past, and they've got the lowest interest rates, than most generations in history. So, it's not all woe is me. I think that there's a supply problem. So far, governments just deal with it through the demand side of things: give people more money, pump it up, keeps everybody happy. And voting for them. At some point, they need to deal with the supply side. They need to change bylaws, allow, you know, different forms of housing and density, and get, you have to knock the NIMBYs out of the way. And at some point, rates will go up, and that'll equalize everything for everybody. And, you know, the dream got smashed in the U.S. after 2006, created big social problems that we're still dealing with today. So I think in terms of when the housing price correction comes, and it will come at some point, we better be careful what we wish for, because that decline in prices is going to hurt people who have invested everything in real estate and will have social problems.
I'm loving you very much, John, as I always do. John Johnson, Davis Ray, good friend of mine, economist, strategist, very smart man with a big heart. Lots to discuss. We're talking money, my good friends. We want you to have a lot of it. Stay tuned. It's Hi-Fi Radio Global News, 640 in Toronto.
Money. Let's take a break. But after, Wolf and Jack will continue their in-depth discussion about money. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio, 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Triumph, you call that CanCon in radio, Canadian content. Yep. Music radio must play 35% Canadian music, Canadiana, and that's why bands like that got so much airplay. Likewise with Rush and Webster. All great bands, of course, but, you know, slightly overplayed relative to other great artists as well. But I digress into specifics of broadcasting. That said, I gave you a little triumph there at the open. TIFF taking place. And a movie has been made about Triumph that has been featured at TIFF. I'm looking forward to seeing that. And our good friend John Johnston had a staycation traveling this beautiful country of ours by car, avoiding airports, which I think is very, very smart. And just telling me that you spent some time in the Maritimes in Prince Edward Island. And I just rewatched The Grand Seduction. That was a TIFF film a few years ago is so funny. The Grand Seduction. JG, you got to watch it. It's absolutely classic movie. It's just wonderful. But let's lay it on the line. We're talking money here. It's a show about just that. Of course, I'm Wolfgang Klein. Any questions for Jack or I, wolfgangklein.com, thewolfonbaystreet.com. John Johnston, good friend of mine, is economist, market strategist, semi-retired, but you never really leave a business like this. And John, of course, continues to keep his mind sharp, advising Davis Ray, which is an independent shop. We're going to be having actually one of your partners on, Mr. O'Connell, joins, I think, next week. Hey, Jack? It's going to be
That's
a good
right,
show
yep.
as well with him. I will say, John, I'm very impressed with the writing. And the content that your firm is building on their websites. It's really, really good stuff. Caught my attention. I commend you all for that. You're really working hard and trying to help people build wealth. We're all in together, my good friends. The great dream of owning a home is becoming a real political issue. It was laughable to see some of the, not debates, but the one-ons with the party leaders on CBC this week. And when Jagdeep Singh was being interviewed, the moderator, who was very sharp and kept all of them on point and would not let them be political and go off on tangents and tangerines. But that's exactly what Jagdeep Singh did. He was trying to avoid a question about what he's going to do for younger people to help them get in the housing market. His response, he's going to attack the telecom companies and have the cell phone bills reduced. Really? Did you not hear the question? We're talking housing, not saving $38 on your phone bill. And JJ, look, in my opinion, I do not think this is a complicated problem, housing shortage. Much of the housing shortage, of course, and the pressure on housing is international. It has to do with immigration, and it has to do with international money. So at the margin, individuals like that are certainly pushing some housing prices higher. And there's a lot of local frustration around that. But again, I'm not into closing the borders on foreign money coming to Canada. That's a closed economy, and that can be a slippery slope. Stay with me, friends. Don't get mad at me just yet. And the reason I can easily say that, we live in Canada. You watch The Grand Seduction. They can't get a doctor to town. This is a big country. There is no land shortage in Canada. We are underpopulated. The issue is they don't open up land for development. They make it very tedious and arduous and slow to expand the landscape. So you mentioned just before the close, the government's not dealing with supply, they're dealing with demand. And Jack, again, both of you gentlemen, you're economists, not I, but there's two parts of that equation, and supply and demand. So JJ, speak to that, and Jack, please pipe in as well.
Well, you know, it's not new, right? People, you know, buy all these, you know, giant houses, and they don't want, you know, anywhere near them any kind of infill with smaller houses or 4 or 5 story apartment buildings. Don't want those renters in the neighborhood. A lot of municipal bylaws need to change a lot to allow more fill-in and more density to occur. And you don't need to do it with 50-story condo towers. One of the things that's going to be interesting is, as we've all learned to work differently in the pandemic, do we need to live in Toronto? Do we need to live in these big cities? I went into to see Davis Ray's new office, which isn't ready yet, and we haven't had an office since February the 28th of 2021. You know, who cares about an office? Our firm is working fine without having an office. You got a couple people in a rented space downtown because it's not as easy for them to work at home, but maybe things are going to be different, and you don't need to build any more housing in Toronto, and you can build it somewhere else, and you can open up all the Canadian landscape for that. And right now we're building all, as a friend of mine keeps saying to me when we talk about this endlessly, we keep building all this housing on top of prime farmland. Why not build it up further up north on rocks? And all you need is a couple good transportation routes up there, some better roads. We got pretty good roads, better roads, train, and lots of telecommunication, and you don't need it. All these people can work from home, and maybe there's room to spread the density out, and there's nodes happening. You know, there's a lot of growth in some of these smaller urban centers, Hamilton, There's lots of things that can be done. You just have to be creative.
Yeah, you know, your farmland point is very interesting. I respect that, because to take good farmland, you have to be able to feed yourself and feed your people. And we, you know, what do they call it? Something to kid us. I'm the chef on the group here. That slipped my mind. Farm to table, correct? Isn't that what it is, JJ? Farm to table.
That's right.
Yeah. Sorry, Jack. You want to pipe in there, please?
Yeah, no, I would just echo JJ's comments there. I was talking to my brother a week ago, and he said we were driving through Bracebridge, and he said my brother works for Magna. So he's like, there's no reason that a Magna plant can't be up here in Bracebridge, Ontario, which is, again, he's not saying that that's a plan that they're going to do, but he's just saying, you look at the European model, and as JJ said, they have hubs, right? We're all congregating all in the big cities here. Why not spread it out? Like you said, logistics is significant. Obviously, we do have transportation, but it can certainly be done. And it also brings up the wages in those types of areas, and that it increases the housing, because there is a housing shortage, not just in Toronto, it's across the board now.
I know, it's an international problem, and now it's being compounded with supply disruption and product shortages and inflation. So there's a lot of pinch points in the system. But again, JJ, you make an interesting point about farmland, because it is not wise to take land that was once forest, you turn it into farm. So that's environmentally impactful to the bad. But so be it. It's set up that way. At least now you're growing something on it. You're feeding people locally. You don't have to transport that stuff and burn more fuel if you can feed yourself locally. And you're self-sustainable in that regard, which is, I think, very intelligent. In terms of building on rock, we certainly have a little bit of that in this country. And I go back to The Grand Seduction. That movie is classic. But they couldn't coerce a doctor to come to that little town to take care of the people. And the people needed a doctor if they were to get the... it's a waste plant that's coming in, an oil waste plant. It wants to create a factory and hence offer some jobs to these poor fishermen who have no employment, and they're collecting pogey or welfare, as a matter of fact. So it is quite the story. But why don't Canadians want to move east? We have the East Coast is so beautiful, yet no one lives there. I don't understand. You just returned, JJ. Can you speak to that point?
Well, people are moving east. You know, they're getting pretty, I found the Easterners weren't quite as friendly towards us with our Ontario license plate as they have been in the past. And I think they're sick of Ontarians coming up and buying their homes, just like some Torontonians are tired of the foreigners coming up and buying our homes and making it increasingly difficult to interact. I think one of the things, you know, moving to Bracebridge for a lot of people wouldn't be the most exciting thing.
I agree.
Now. But, you know, in 15 years, if a few companies relocate in a place like Bracebridge, you're going to get some culture building up around that. You end up with a local theater, a live theater. You end up with some festivals. You end up with some nice restaurants. Like 20 years ago, none of us would have ever given Hamilton a second thought. Hamilton's pretty cool now. They got the kind of things that higher income professionals want to see when they're relaxing and enjoying themselves.
A friend of mine spent some time in Edmonton, and he actually began falling in love with the city. He said there's some fantastic culture in the city now because of the money around it. Indeed, it does happen. You are correct. Look, we're speaking with John Johnson. Sorry, I just want to get to a break here, John. I'll come back to you. Of course, Jack Hartle, my partner, producer of the show. Hi-Fi Radio is a weekly that we do right here on Global News 640 in Toronto each and every Saturday night. Please, if you have any questions for Jack or I, we welcome you to reach out, wolfgangklein.com. You can also get a view of how we manage money and how we help clients build success. I've been at this game for over 20 years, and it seems like yesterday when I began. It's very exciting times, my good friends. Stay tuned. More show right after this.
Don't go anywhere. There's more great show after this. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
I've got the sun in the sky, all the water surround me. Sometimes I lose. I've been battered, but I never bruise. It's not so bad. And I say,
Wait, hey, it's just an ordinary day, and it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, you just got to say it's alright.
It's Hi-Fi Radio, show about money. Spend time with Jack and I, you're going to have more of it. Honestly, you will. And that's all right. John Johnson is spending some time with us this evening. Very smart man. He's an economist. He's a strategist. He's been in the business for a long time. He's semi-retired now, but still continues to get up in the morning and offer his advice to Davis Ray, of which he is a partner with. It's a money management firm, a little independent firm here in Toronto. They're a very, very good firm. I know a number of the partners with N. They're my friendly competition, and I welcome competition. I fear not. I welcome competition because we're all in this together, my good friends. Indeed, we are. Yes, John spent some time in the East Coast for a few days, and I feel Canadian right now, so I'm going to give you some CanCon along the way during the show. A little great big C there. So we continue with this political push on real estate and affordability. You know, John, I do want to remind you and remind everyone before we get further the conversation about the difference in times for each major generation, from boomers to Xers to Ys to Zs. And I don't know if we're going to start back in the As, I guess, eh? Generation A. I wouldn't mind being an A generation, but I digress. When I bought my first home, mortgage rates were 11.75%. Each mortgage payment at the beginning, during the first 5 years, 90% of a monthly payment was to service the debt. 10% was to service or to pay off the debt. So for the first 5 years, you're basically back then at 10 or 12% interest, a mortgagor was basically supporting the interest payments and not really reducing the outstanding balance. It took years 10 to 15 that when you start to see it be about a 50-50 split, half interest, half principal. Very different math today. At 2% mortgage rates, all of a sudden, I'm not sure if it's 50 or 60% of each monthly payment, it could even be higher. And do the math on $100,000, that would be $2,000 of interest. You'd have a $450 monthly payment. So I think about 80% or 90%, in fact, of a monthly payment right now is principal, where you're reducing the outstanding debt, and 10% of your monthly payment, in fact, is only servicing the debt. So anyone taking on a big chunky mortgage today, as chunky as it may be, you are quickly building wealth with each monthly payment. So feel good about that, because when I bought my first home, I wasn't building wealth with each monthly payment. But it's a very political issue this year, and I do think we have to continue to find means to solve the problem so that affordability remains viable, I think, for each and every generation in this great country of ours. But how can we, so JJ, let's find some more solutions that we could perhaps offer to the politicians listening to the show right now.
Well, we've talked about a few things, but I just a quick observation. I don't watch the economic data as closely as I used to, but I do look at it every once in a while, and I notice that Canadian housing starts are at a 40-year high, and that means there's a lot of places being started. So the supply side is responding. Basically, the best cure for high prices is high prices, because it ultimately stimulates supply. And it has. And, you know, housing starts have been running pretty good in Canada for a number of years now. So the supply side is adjusting. I think it's being swamped by an element of mania. You know, you and I, Wolf, have experienced some housing cycles. You know, if we look back to the early 70s, there was a bust in the early 70s, there was a big bust in the early 80s, and there was a big bust in the early 90s, which worked to my advantage. And it sounds like
I bought a home. That's my second home in the 90s, my first home in the in 1990. I got hit in the 80s, the late 80s, when rates were 12, but then I managed to make up for it in 96 when I reset the deck at a much better point. It wasn't easy. I must say the real estate market was not easy back then. And all people know is a sure way to make money to buy real estate. And at some point, I'm just waiting for that rude awakening. And we have been in a 27-year real estate bull market. It began in 96 and it is 2021. And here in Canada, there really has not been a correction greater than 6 months. Unlike America, which had a correction during the financial crises that lasted a number of years. So that they had a real correction. We didn't. Their affordability came back in where prices dropped, became extremely affordable, stabilized, supply met demand, much healthier. Up here in Canada, the world looks at us and says, oh my God, is your market ever expensive? And it continues to go higher. Durham region popped some 40%, all COVID driven, which again, philosophically leads me to, will this new way of life stick? Because I do believe the younger generation entering the workforce, unlike the, you're semi-retired, I'm 8 years away or 9 years away from retirement. My entire career has been spent downtown, nose to nose, toes to toes with people, developing human interactions and true relationships with people that have been invaluable in my career. So I can sort of rest on those laurels, you know, for the next 10 years. I have enough relationships around me. But younger folk don't have that. And they need that beyond social media, I believe.
I agree. I look at my kids, absolutely the case. But when I worked at that big bank that we worked at together, I used to spend a lot of time traveling across the country. And, you know, I was in some small places, Prince George, BC, and other places. And there were guys, people there, I shouldn't say guys anymore, people there, who had pretty big books, made a lot of money for our former employer through commissions. And, you know, there's a lot of businesses that can generate that kind of activity for a lot of people all over the place. And I think the geographic spacing out of things is going to come, and ultimately that's going to be it. And, you know, I'd leave you with maybe one thought. Think about what the end of the secular bull market in equities, that Javed times at 2029 or 2030, that lines up with a lot of these ideas that we're in another roaring 20s.
Yeah, and, that's right.
And we're building up, you know, we had a crisis in 2008, 2009, which was a debt crisis. We now have more debt other than U.S. households and a few other areas of the world economy. We have way more debt globally in the private sector and the government sector. And that's all going to come home to roost. And I look at the rhythms of history like a lot of cyclical analysts do, including technical analysts. And I know Javed looks at that, and his former boss, Ray Hansen, who I think we both think pretty highly of. You know, 2008-09 looked like 1921 in hindsight, 2021. And maybe 1929 is coming. In 2029. And we have to ask ourselves, even if it doesn't, ask yourself the question, what's going to trigger the end of the secular bull market in equities? And could that have an impact on housing?
Yeah, the answer is interest rates. It's as simple as that. That's my answer. And I don't know, you're the economist, so I'll call you the professor. Am I correct?
Yep. And, you know, ultimately, we're laying with all the government debt in the system, with weak governments, populist governments, weakening public institutions and central bankers now talking about worrying about what the unemployment rate is amongst marginalized communities. And I think the unemployment rate amongst marginalized communities is very important, but it's not important for setting interest rates. We're setting the conditions for a nice run in inflation, as Jack alluded to earlier. And on a 5-year view, I think we could have an inflation problem, not in a 3-year view. And that means much higher interest rates, and much higher interest rate means that whole asset price inflation reverses.
Correct. Yeah. Well, JJ, on that note, you sort of brought me down, but it is the roaring 20s. So we got time, a good bit of time, my good friends. Just stay close to us and we'll do our best to navigate through the turbulence for the next 10 years. Like I said, we got time, but buyer beware, and it's good to have some kind of a roadmap and a gauge as to how to play it out. Don't leave the party yet, I guess is what we're saying, so stay tuned. More show, of course, right after this.
Listen, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, more money talk. You're listening to Hi-Fi Radio from Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Well, there we go. Three songs lined up, all Canadian. Let's talk about the dollar, Canadian dollar. It's been quite strong. Of course, commodities have been strong, and that makes sense. Petrocurrency, let's never forget that. One of our managing directors, Mr. Jeff Blanco, he's a currency trader, expert, of course, in the Canadian dollar and the U.S. dollar. He's going to spend some time with us. Thank you very, very much, Jeff, for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for the prairie song as an old prairie boy. I appreciate that.
I know you are. That's exactly why I gave you that. I was going to say it was going to be a song for me, Clap for the Wolf Man. I said, I'll just give this one to Jeff, being a man from the prairies. Is that or a Wee Kings thing? Indeed. So let's speak about the loonie. It's flirting with, 80 cents? It's up 3 or 4 cents this year. What's your take on it for the balance of the year and looking further out?
Well, we had there's lots going on, and obviously in the world of financial markets right now, we've got the concerns about the Delta variant. We've got all kinds of inflation expectations peaking up globally now, and expectations of what various central banks are going to do about that. So I think what the last time I was on your show was back in early June before the June Fed meeting, when they had a massive hawkish shift. And I think I warned you at the time that to keep an eye on Fed, the Fed narrative, as well as the Canadian dollar positioning, that was an issue for me. That hawkish move for the Fed in the June and the big position unwind, which the market's actually net short Canadian dollars now, was sort of the reason, one of the reasons why we moved from that 120, 121 level all the way up here to the 128. So now it's just a function of inflation expectations, I think, globally. The Fed had turned out very hawkish. Now they're doing their best to sort of talk that back, and now talking about may have the need for tapering as we get into the end of the year. You've got the ECB becoming a little bit more hawkish and talking about reducing their PEPP over there, which is their equivalent. And so there's lots of stuff going on. You've got elections in Germany. It's going to be an interesting end to the year, I think. Some good things out there for the Canadian dollar. We are still one of the two currencies in the G10 that are up on the year against the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar's had a pretty good year in general. And look at the commodity run we've had, as you mentioned earlier. We're still getting a little bit of yield support, the Canadian dollar is now. So I think we're probably near the top end for the U.S. dollar and the weakest point for the Canadian dollar. Coming into year end, barring any crazy election outcomes on Monday, but I don't really think that is going to be a major factor for the currency next week.
The election will not be a factor for the currency next week, in your opinion.
I don't see it being a big factor. It never really is. It looks like it's going to be a minority government one way or the other, whether it's liberal or conservative. Both are spending money. Both have similar type platforms. I don't think it's going to be an earth shaker for the Canadian dollar.
On balance, you think the Canadian dollar is going to actually work its way higher in the next year or so?
That, once again, that depends on a lot of things. And going into the end of the year, I think it's very likely that we see sort of a weakening of the U.S. dollar in general. And this is a lot, just once again, on rate hike expectations and inflation expectations across globally. You get the Bank of England looking at, with two hikes priced in by the end of 2022. U.S. only has one hike priced in by the first quarter of 2023. So it's just going to be a function of how the data sorts out and how those expectations filter into the interest rate market and impacting the currency market. So I think the U.S. dollar is probably not going to do much more into the end of the year. Moving ahead from that, I think you'll see more of the other central banks globally pushing back and in terms of their, fighting their inflationary trends, because they're quite high over there. And that'll sort of support the euro. I think the pound will be supported, and all that should sort of weigh in the U.S. dollar in general.
Yeah, we had one of our portfolio managers on. Sorry, Jack. who thought, and they, Jack, you remember who that person was, that the first mover in terms of an interest rate hike will be the Bank of Canada, which again will be very supportive of the Canadian dollar. And by the way, friends at home, as Jeff Blanco is speaking about global banks and central banks for each nation who try to control interest rates within their own market. When a central banker is looking at inflation, they can take on one of two mindsets. One of a hawk, which means that they're very concerned with inflation. They're flying over with very sharp eyes, watching inflation, ready to move and pounce, as opposed to a dove when they're not concerned. So hawks and doves. A hawk does not like inflation. They're going to watch it very closely and react with a higher interest rate policy. And if they're dovish, they are going to let it slide and let it run a little longer. So I just want to share that with you. Hawks and doves, my good friends, you've learned something this week. Sorry, Jack, you want to pipe in there, please?
Yeah, the problem is right now is like every central bank globally, nobody really wants to have higher rates. They keep talking about, well, these inflationary expectations these inflationary items are being temporary. That is going to be a very interesting thing. What makes it tougher to call who's going to be the first central bank out of the gate on a hike. Bank of Canada was, when we look back a couple of months ago, they were probably the most hawkish of the G10 central banks for a while. Our recent data has sort of put them once again on the back burner as well. So I think my view is it's going to be the Bank of England is going to be the first one to hike of the major central banks, to be honest. And Bank of Canada, I think, is more moving towards following the Fed when that happens, maybe by the end of 2022.
Yeah. Well, again, our last guest, John Johnson, sees, you know, obviously some pressure to increase interest rates, but very, very modestly. He doesn't see interest rates, i.e. the overnight lending rate, getting above 2% for about 5 years. Right now, what the overnight lending rate, which is what a bank can go to the central bank and borrow money for, is what, 0 to 0.25% still, is it not? So to go to what, 0.25% to 0.5% is still somewhere between zero and zip. That's it for the show, right. My good friends. Jeff Blanco, a managing director, foreign exchange currency trader at Canaccord, operating in full force on the trading desk. Of course, Jack and I take care of retail individuals, so we can operate every now and then from 30,000 feet and stay safe. And collectively, we're here to take care of you, my good friends. Jack, good job. As always, I want to wish you a safe weekend. I hope your tickle in your throat goes away, but we know that you're COVID-free. That's a good thing. And, of course, my friends at home, I want to thank you for spending some time with us. Any questions, wolfgangklein.com. We're here to help you have more money, so just know that you have a friend in your camp if the need should arise. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Global News Radio 640 in Toronto.
You've been listening to Hi-Fi Radio with Wolfgang Klein and Jack Hartle, portfolio managers at Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management. For questions about today's show or any money questions you need answered, email Wolf and Jack at wolfgangklein.com. Hi-Fi Radio, for the love of money. We'll see you next week.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.